Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me?
We'll be doing some of that here. It's 1210. This is WGN. Hi, it's John Williams. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, heard weekdays from noon to 1 on WGN Radio. I hope you hear me from 9 to noon weekdays and now noon to 1 as well. Of course, you hear Bob Surratt and company in the morning, and then Anna DeVlantis comes your way after this. There is a press conference scheduled here at WGN Radio for 1 o'clock this afternoon. Steve, that's
the mayor at 1 and the governor at 2:30.
And then probably the president back on his schedule as well a little later on, right?
Yeah, 4-ish.
4 o'clock or so. So we'll keep you posted on all of that. Orion Samuelson's also on a line. Oh, is that you, I hear?
It is indeed, making a little noise, but trying to be quiet.
What the heck's going on over there, Orion Samuelson?
Well, let me read you some of the headlines that I've shared for the past 24 hours. Dateline Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Smithfield closes the South Dakota pork plant due to the coronavirus. And then we've got a story headlined Elbow to Elbow. North America meat plant workers fall ill and walk off the jobs. And then I've got another headline saying an Iowa beef plant suspends operations after workers get virus. And I'm learning some things about agriculture that after all the years I've covered it, I didn't know. I didn't know, for example, that the plant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, owned by Virginia-based Smithfield Foods, employs 3,700 people. And it has become a hotspot for infections. Health officials said yesterday 293 of the 730 people who have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in South Dakota work at the plant. And I think I'm not a medical expert, but I think the big problem with the processing industry, John, is the fact that you can't keep that space that you're supposed to be keeping, trying to stop the virus, because these meat plant workers work side by side, and the conditions are not easy. And so I said about 5 weeks ago, when we saw a big purchase of meat hoarding, I think, that you didn't have to worry about that, because we will continue to farm, we'll feed cattle and hogs and poultry, and we'll milk cows. So that would not be the problem. But I said if there is a problem, it would come from two areas: labor and the shortage of getting the labor to do what has to be done, and then the transportation industry, getting the goods from the farm and the processing plants to the grocery stores and supermarkets. And we're beginning to see that happen. But again, let me say, I don't think we're going to see a shortage of meat, although we've started to see a purchase that's higher than normal of meat products at grocery stores and supermarkets.
I'm also reading that the question becomes not only should those workers be allowed to work or forced to work, that is, you have to have your job or you're quitting and you don't get unemployment benefits. That's right. An interesting question, but the initial report of that plant in South Dakota was that the workers did want to work, even though a couple hundred of them, over 200 of them, had tested positive for COVID-19. And then the question becomes, what do we do with the meat that they produce at those plants, to say nothing of the health of the workers that are actually processing it. It's 12:13. Oh, we'll take our first break here. When we come back, we're going to visit with a local business owner, have a short conversation about how she is managing things, and then we'll move on to some other business topics on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. And speaking of some of the numbers turning around, we talked a little bit about this last week. The Dow, of course, was trading over 29 at one point and then slipped to 18.5 We buoyed back up to 23,000 last week. Now we're giving some of it back, down 509 points right now. The other indices are down 2. The Dow is at 23.2, down 509. The Nasdaq's off 64 points, and the S&P is off 54 points. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, and Kathleen is on a phone line. Hold on a second, Kathleen. I'm going to move that over there, put this here. Kathleen Carr is the manager of a company called The Growing Scene. It's in Marengo and McHenry County. She also has another business called Assurance Home Service. Kathleen, you're on WGN Radio. Let's just talk a little bit about how, are you a business owner or manager, Kathleen?
I am the owner, John. And before we get too far into the conversation, I just wanted to say thank you so much for everything that you're doing for small businesses. We really appreciate your support during this incredibly trying time.
Now you have it from all of us here at WGN, and Orion's on the line too. In fact, do you feel it as a business owner, Kathleen, from everybody? Do you get the feeling everybody's pulling for small businesses right now?
Absolutely. And we need the support. We appreciate the support, and we're going to try to do whatever we can to enrich the communities that we operate in.
Doesn't change the fact, though, that maybe business is off, but a landscaping business, so that's one of your companies, The Growing Scene, that's an essential service, right?
Yes, we are considered an essential service, and I think it's in large part due to, you know, one, the state of Illinois recognizing the services that we provide, and sanitation and cleanliness, but then also due to, we have an industry organization called the Illinois Landscape Contractors Association. I don't know that I would be able to operate right now if it wasn't for that support of that industry organization. They have just been a lifeline to all of their members.
Seemed to me like guys working outside, maybe gals too, but landscapers can be socially distanced. They're not inside. So it also strikes me as an opportunity for relatively safe work these days. What is business like? Are people delaying projects or canceling projects? What's happening?
No one has canceled projects, although certainly if they didn't feel comfortable proceeding, I would honor that. I guess one of the changes for us is I've been in business now for 25 years, and I've always founded our business based on communication. Well, communication is just taking another form now. Instead of meeting with people face-to-face for a prolonged period of time, I'm talking to them over the phone first and then kind of limiting our face-to-face contact. Yeah. With my landscape foreman, I've sort of trained him and encouraged him, you know, as soon as he gets to a property, he rings the doorbell and he visits with the homeowner to get an idea of what they want done. Well, now I'm specifically instructing him to not interact with the homeowner. They know that you're there. They know, you know, what you're going to be doing outside, but don't ring the doorbell. Don't have any face-to-face interchange with them.
I have a quick question on your marketing year versus your growing year. Are you starting to find growth in your orchards or whatever landscape material you're providing?
So we don't grow anything ourselves, but we rely heavily on area nurseries. And it seems like their availability is good. And, you know, we placed orders 5 or 6 months ago. Unfortunately, because I've chosen not to open our garden center, I've had to cancel those orders. And I feel bad about that, but our growers have been tremendously professional about it and understanding about it and really encouraging because, you know, they don't want us to have to take product that we're not going to be able to sell. So yeah. I appreciate that relationship.
That's interesting, though, but this is a question for both of you. It would seem to me like they could. Brenda and I went to Gethsemane Gardens in Chicago over the weekend just to see, and they were closed. And I thought, boy, if ever folks are jonesing for a little, you know, green and color, it's now. And I think I would have tried to buy some flowers if I could have. But are you going to be able to open a sort of retail flower shop or plant store or sell things that way?
It's my understanding that right now garden centers are only allowed to be open for kind of the curbside, you know, no contact. Personally, I've made the decision not to open our garden center until the stay-at-home order is lifted.
Yeah.
We may in May, you know, depending on what happens, we may in May have some, you know, pre-order curbside pickups available. But for right now, it's just a business decision that I've decided to focus on the landscaping portion of our company because we can operate it. And I am confident that we can operate it according to the CDC guidelines. And I've just chosen not, you know, to open our garden center for retail sales.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because it's been a good spring season. Stuff is really coming up, I suppose. I don't know if that matters to farmers, but it seems to be a good season for yards, too.
Yeah, and the other thing that I was concerned about with Easter weekend, the amount of flowers that were planted to meet the selling season for Easter ended up not selling a lot of it because church services were not held in churches, so... Yeah. That's just another challenge, I think, that farmers
have. Yeah, interesting. I hadn't even thought about that. Kathleen Carr's on a line with us from Marengo in McHenry County. The Growing Scene is her business. The website is The Growing Scene, obviously S-C-E-N-E, thegrowingscene.com. And the company's phone number is 815-923-7322. I'm out of time. Kathleen, maybe we'll visit again about your other business. I'm quite interested in that. But for now, good luck to you. Good luck to your people, okay?
And thank you very much, John.
It's our pleasure. Oh, thanks for your help on that, too. Let's talk to another business this time tomorrow, okay?
Okay, I'll be here.
And, you know, how do we find those businesses? You just text 312-981-7200. And if we can have a conversation about how you're managing, we'd love to hear from you. Just text who you are to 312-981-7200. On a phone line, the editor of Chicago Inno, the associate editor, Catherine Davis, joins us now on WGN. Catherine, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And so let's just dive right into this Groupon. Wow, that's a big cut here in Chicago. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, so, you know, last week we got news that Groupon was furloughing significant portions of its sales and operation teams, the company was citing, you know, impacts from the ongoing coronavirus. But this morning, in a securities filing today, Groupon revealed that it's actually cutting 1,400 jobs, and that could go up to 2,800 by this summer. So they're cutting a significant amount of jobs. They said that this is part of a restructuring that started in February and then fueled by the coronavirus.
Do they anticipate that they're going to hire these people back, or is this essentially you're fired?
So it's a little unclear. I think some of them are furloughed, so, you know, in the sense that they will be hired back at some point. But I do believe that many of them are just, like, complete cuts.
Which is, there are some businesses that a month ago you thought were just the right industry, the right sector, the right place to be. And I would have put, you know, a tech company like Groupon in that category. It's funny how vulnerable some of these big businesses suddenly have become.
Yeah, you know, I think the interesting thing with Groupon is that, you know, just recently they decided to shift their business away from, you know, providing deals on goods and focusing more on the travel and entertainment experience industries. You know, but with coronavirus basically shutting everything down, people aren't going to the hair salons or restaurants or the movie theaters right now and aren't even able to take advantage of, you know, what Groupon is offering at the moment.
What's the company Perk Spot do, and what's happening there?
Yeah, so Perk Spot, they're a Chicago tech company, been around since about 2006. And basically what they do is they make a workplace benefit platform. So essentially they're negotiating with vendors on behalf of employers to give their employees perks at places. So the idea is, you know, one of their clients is Lyft, another one is Walgreens. So, you know, this is just an example. I don't know if this is true, but perhaps, you know, Lyft employees are working with PerkSpot to get deals at Walgreens and then vice versa. But, you know, they were in the news last week because they laid off about 10 employees, which was just about 10% of their entire staff. But it was just kind of, you know, the latest example of a Chicago tech company downsizing amid the pandemic.
Here's another interesting company, Party Slate. Tell me about that startup.
Yeah, so Party Slate, you know, this is a company Chicago Inno has been covering, you know, since they launched in 2016. And, you know, the best way to describe them is an online platform for planning your party, your wedding, your gala, etc. They specialize in event planning across 14 cities in the U.S. And, you know, we've been in touch with them, and we're kind of covering them really closely throughout this coronavirus pandemic now through the end of May. And just kind of, you know, keeping in touch with them about how this has impacted their business, because an events business, you can't have events right now. And so, you know, the founder was telling me that, you know, to survive, she's had to make salary reductions, lay off a few employees, and that they're even pivoting to virtual events, so that, you know, they're mostly accustomed to holding these in-person ones.
But they had a Series A. Did they have two rounds of funding?
Yeah.
Did they not?
Yeah.
What happens to that money? Do they get that up front and then eventually plan to expand? And if they don't expand, what happens to that cash?
Yeah. So Party Slate, they raised $5.5 million just in January. And, you know, the founder was like, we were really fortunate to have raised this money so close to the beginning of the pandemic. And, you know, they raise all that money at once, so that's theirs. And I think the idea is for them to, you know, use it extremely strategically right now. Wasting money is not an option. And, you know, if down the line, you know, the company isn't growing as much as the investors wanted, you know, that's a discussion that they'll have. And not sure exactly what happens beyond that. But, you know, in total now they've raised about $11 million. And, you know, the founder's just kind of really keen on spending that money wisely.
I got less than a minute left, but I'm really interested in Sublee. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes, Sublee. So this is a cool new company. It's a student startup, actually, coming out of the University of Chicago. And they have created a platform for students to easily find subletters amidst their college community. So, you know, you have to have a .edu email to sign up. They really want this to be a concrete college platform, just because the way they were describing it to me is that students feel more comfortable subleasing their apartments or their houses to, you know, other people they go to school with, which makes a lot of sense, right? And, you know, they won the college's, one of their pitch competitions, and $25,000 to help grow this going forward.
Is there a sign-up fee, or did they not waive that?
Yeah, so that all their fees are waived right now because of coronavirus. But, you know, the idea of their business model depends on when a lease is established, they will take a small fee for, you know, connecting the two parties.
What a good idea. Shoot, that's been right there all along. Anybody that went to school or sent a kid to school knows that dance. And these people have figured out a way to not only solve a problem, but take a little off the top. And what a good business model that sounds like to me. Is there a URL for that? Is that website up and running?
Yeah, they are up and running. It's just sublee.space. Is their website.
SUBLI.space is the website.
Yes.
Very interesting. And as always, a nice conversation with you. We appreciate your time this afternoon, Catherine. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, John.
12:35, this is WGN Radio. John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Glink joins us, the founder and CEO of BestMoneyMoves.com. You hear her regularly Monday afternoons on WGN, and there she is. Hi, Elise. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine, John. Thanks. You staying safe?
Yep, all's good here. Last week, the market actually had a pretty good week, and I probably shouldn't do this, but I've been keeping score on part of the rebound, and then we're off another 500-600 points today, and I'm probably trying too hard to make sense of it all.
You shouldn't stress too much. Nobody can make sense of this. It doesn't make sense yet.
Yeah. The Dow's off 600 points, which would be a big story once upon a time. Do you just kind of brush past these 600 and 900 point swings?
Well, I think that it's really hard emotionally if you're looking every day at the stock market and trying to figure out what that means for your retirement. And certainly, like you, I have heard so many stories from people, readers and listeners to the station who have been emailing me about their concerns that they may never retire now that this has gone so haywire. And I do want to reassure everybody that at some point in time, things will get back to some sort of new normal. But remember, where we are now with the stock market is actually even a little bit ahead of where we were last December. So we haven't rolled back too far right now.
Say that again.
So the stock market in December was actually a little bit lower than it is right now. So the volatility, the ups and downs, make us feel really nervous. But if you look at kind of where the stock market is, you're still doing okay. We had had a big jump up from maybe November to February, and the market sort of zoomed ahead, and now we've rolled back a little bit, and this is perfectly normal.
December of 2019?
Yeah. I know, it's hard to believe. Doesn't that feel like 100 years ago?
A, and B, that it was at this point as recently as that. That's surprising to me. Also, the Paycheck Protection Program, okay, that's kind of new, and I'm not going to ask him to be perfect a few weeks into it. What are you hearing about that?
So what I'm hearing is that a few businesses are starting to receive funds. Something like 70% of all small businesses in the U.S. actually applied for the Paycheck Protection Program, which is no small feat. And many of the banks ran out of their share of the application amount pretty quickly. And so there's a fight going on in Congress to increase it by almost double. But I'm sure there'll be some more money there. But in the meantime, the Federal Reserve stepped up this past week and said, don't worry, we're going to guarantee $2.3 trillion. We're basically going to buy all of the debt. We're going to buy junk bonds. We're going to buy all kinds of stuff that we've never bought before. Don't worry.
And,
so everybody worried.
Yeah, well, I had a conversation in part with Terry Savage last week about how we know that most Americans are not good about having a rainy day fund or even enough for a new appliance. But I'm still just a little surprised that a month into this, businesses are reeling the way they are. I understand small businesses that maybe just don't have the resources, but great big businesses don't seem to have had the resources for a 1 month shutdown. I'm not minimizing how consequential that is, but there was very little time between the virus hitting and everybody needing instant relief.
Right. Well, let's take a look at Disney, because I think that Bob Iger
today. Go ahead.
Right. So Bob Iger, who was their CEO for a long, long time, had a well choreographed step down off the plate, and they just introduced the new CEO, a guy who literally nobody had ever heard of, had been at Disney a long time, but kind of, you know, running parks and recreations, right? And basically, Iger moved to executive chairman, and he's now come back less than a month after he stepped down. But just with what's going on with Disney, I think, is a good example of just how devastated everybody's been. It's true that their new Disney streaming service has 50 million people all paying them whatever it is a month, $5-6. But they've closed every single park that they own. The cruise ships, they've got three like probably billion-dollar cruise ships under construction in Germany that may never sail. Nobody is taking cruises. So all of the revenue from their parks, they don't do movie openings anymore. Production has been shut down on all of their television and movie production sets here and abroad. And so when you think about what a company like that that's well-diversified was zooming along, making really good money, making everybody happy, and now they've laid off or furloughed tens of thousands of people, they've gotten rid of all of their revenue streams, and the only thing that's doing well is this new streaming service, and every single company in the country is facing these sorts of massive shutdowns and layoffs and lack of revenue at all that's coming in. And I don't think anybody had that kind of crisis planning in mind.
Boy, that's such an interesting point. You'd think, except for the streaming service, well, okay, you can't go to the parks, but you can go on a cruise. No, you can't go on a cruise. Well, we'll stay in the, you know, everything Disney does is entertaining us, and often in person, save the streaming services. So at least they've got that. But I take your point that they must have monstrous expenses and now literally no revenue in all of those areas.
Correct. And so when you think about what expenses they have, it's not even just people, which is, of course, enormous, right? But they owe massive amounts of property taxes on all the properties that they own around the world. They own retail stores, so they owe rental for the retail stores that are closed and that nothing is selling. And so they've got manufacturing production facilities to create all of these things that we do here and abroad. And so there's really just a lot of built-in costs. And when I think about even Fortune Brands, which is one of our local brands here, you know, in Chicago, you know, what they manufacture, which is all sorts of appliances and things for your house, and they've got a cabinet company and a faucet company. Who's actually installing all that stuff right now? Who's building those houses? Real estate has sort of stopped in its tracks for the moment. In fact, we just saw some early numbers from the National Association of Realtors saying that listings is down 27%. Home buyers are down 27%. And basically, the market has come to a crawl.
I want to talk, but I'm out of time today. Maybe tomorrow on my 9 to noon show, you could join us to talk a little bit more about what's going on with the insurance business. These rebates, some of them you say are doing really well, others not so much. Could we carve out some time between 9 and noon tomorrow with you, Elise?
I'd be delighted.
I think our listeners would, too. That's Elise Gling. Thanks for joining us on WGN. It's 12:42. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The loans are coming. Crane says Wintrust Financial and CIBC Bank U.S. have secured approvals from the federal government for rescue loans for about 9,000 businesses. Rosemont-based Wintrust won approval from the U.S. Small Business Administration for applications for more than 7,700 businesses, totaling $3.1 billion. Uber Eats has launched a virtual restaurant week to help increase demand to 500 local Chicago restaurants. We're in the middle of it now. It runs through April 23rd. You can order multi-course family meals through the Uber Eats mobile application. And Crane says Groupon cut 1,400 jobs as part of a restructuring started in February, but then was fueled by the pandemic. It expects to cut another 1,400 by the end of June. That's 44% of its workforce. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Steve Bertrand, how are the markets?
So off the low, down now the Dow 429 points, the NASDAQ down 37, and the S&P 500 down 42.
Back to you, Orion Samuelson. What's news on the agribusiness scene?
Well, first of all, let's quickly review the prices at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. The May the July contract of wheat is down 2.5 cents a bushel. The July contract for corn down half a penny at $3.36 and a quarter cents, and the July soybean contract trading down 7 and a quarter cents at $8.63 and a half cents. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, we find the June lean hog contract down $3.75 a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract down the $3 per hundredweight daily limit. And the April feeder cattle contract is down the $4.50 daily trading limit. As we talked earlier, Virginia-based Smithfield Foods announced yesterday it is closing its pork processing plant in Sioux Falls until further notice, after dozens of employees have tested positive for the coronavirus. The announcement came a day after South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem and Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken wrote to Smithfield and urged the company to suspend operations for 14 days so that its workers could self-isolate and the plant could be disinfected. But after that letter and the announcement that we heard over the weekend, we find the plant shutting for 14 days at least, and it could be more. The Sioux Falls facility is one of the largest pork processing plants in the U.S., supplying nearly 130 million servings of food per week, or that's about 18 million servings per day. Meanwhile, as if that wasn't enough of a concern, an infectious and fatal strain of bird flu has been confirmed in a commercial turkey flock in South Carolina. That's the first case of the more serious strain of the disease in the United States since 2017. That outbreak took the lives of about 48 million birds in the U.S. poultry industry. And finally, concern about summertime festivals and what might happen to county and state fairs. Still no decision on that. But we did get a decision on one of the rural functions that we've observed for decades in Harvard, Illinois. Harvard Milk Days, scheduled for the first weekend of June Dairy Month, has now been postponed to October 16, 17, and 18. Report and repeat, Harvard Milk Days, normally the first weekend of June, is now going to be held October 16, 17, and 18 in Harvard, Illinois. That's your money on 720 WGN.
1249 WGN. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Amy Guth, business reporter, joins us again to talk about some other business stories in the news. Amy, welcome back. And why don't you start with Grubhub? Everybody's at least eating and eating differently. How's that affecting Grubhub?
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of food-related news today. So Grubhub has pulled their 2020 guidance. Of course, once they did that, their stock fell about 9.6% in New York this morning. Because what they really said is our commitment to $100 million this year in adjusted earnings is just not going to happen. They've said that they're going to reinvest their second quarter profits into a program to help restaurants, which I think is being met with a lot of skepticism, because prior to everything hitting with coronavirus, there was a lot of contentious stuff happening with restaurants and Grubhub, where a lot of restaurants were saying, hey, we didn't ask to be marketed, you know, have this, why are you taking this marketing fee? We didn't ask for this. At one point, even Grubhub was accused of using fake phone numbers to make sure calls were routed to Grubhub, not to the restaurant. So there was a lot of contentious stuff there. So they have said, hey, we're not going to meet that goal. They did say they, as of the end of March, they had about $6 million in liquidity. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. They didn't really say what those tools are and what these programs are that are aimed to support restaurants right now. But that's kind of a big question mark, I think, that's either going to make it or break it for those relationships with restaurant owners, with so many of them struggling right now in a business that already is really pretty thin profit margins. Most restaurants are about 3-5% profit.
Scott Weiner was on with Dean Richards over the weekend. He runs a restaurant group, and Dean was doing his show on Sunday. They were actually giving away some food that the restaurants had prepared, Easter dinners, to our listeners. But he said that sometimes these food delivery services charge a third of the cost of the food. And I was shocked, I think Dean was too, to hear it was that high. I always thought it was a good relationship between the delivery services and the restaurants. I guess not.
No, in fact, you know, I think a lot of people were very surprised to find out what a big stake, you know, what a big piece of the pie that this delivery service was taking. There have been similar kinds of pushback with other delivery partners, DoorDash and Uber Eats and those kind of things. Because I think a lot of this contentious stuff brought that to light, and a lot of consumers really thought, that's unfair.
Yeah, no kidding. Speaking of food, one more time, though, the bottom line on the Grubhub story is what then? It's not like they're going out of business.
They're not going out of business, but they're certainly not going to make the commitment to their investors that they had promised earlier this year prior to COVID-19.
In other food news, kale, quinoa, not so much.
I think this is so interesting. I'm always fascinated to see what are consumer spending habits, particularly around food, because they're almost always in response to something else. So some interesting things happened. We saw, you know, leading up to the pandemic, we saw a lot of push for plant-based, you know, meat substitute products, less dairy. Even one of the milk producers locally was saying, we're not going to make it. We're done here. It's not going to work. No one's buying dairy. They're buying soy milk and almond milk and things like that and all these alternative milks. But suddenly with the, you know, hey, we got to hunker down. We need to stock up. What happened was people abandoned all of that, the natural, the organic, the plant-based meat, the dairy-free, went out the window, and people doubled down on the comfort food that they know and love. Some of the numbers I thought were interesting. Hormel reported that Spam sales rose 37%. Potato growers reported a huge surge after struggling with low-carb diets impacting their bottom line, things like that. Meat being sold out at grocery stores, milk being hard to find that first week that the orders really went in. So this is kind of looking at what happened in March, because behavior changed pretty significantly. Even Mondelez International saying Oreo sales were way up, where they had been struggling and trying to find smaller natural food makers to buy or partner with to help reach the consumer and what the consumer wanted. But here, this happens, and we're talking about like up to 20% surge, things like Campbell's Soup, Kraft Heinz, General Mills, and those kind of companies that make those processed packaged foods.
I don't know what we're going to discover when this is all done. At first, I thought, I wonder if people are going to use this time to do sit-ups and eat healthy and finally do something that they'd always promised themselves they would do. I see no evidence of that. I will say that. That's
right.
That's just me and maybe some observations of other people's grocery carts. I see a lot of ice cream. I see a lot of beer. I see a lot of cookies. I see a lot of chips. A lot of chips moving out the aisles.
Well, the hashtag that's going around right now is the quarantine 15, kind of like the freshman 15. You go off to school and not eat really healthy. So the quarantine 15, I think a lot of people are posting about, hey, I'm going to try to do a workout video to avoid the quarantine 15, things like that. But another piece of this that I think is really interesting is that with all of these, you know, shelf-stable kind of foods that we saw surge when stay-home orders were first happening, what it's starting to shift to now that we have 17 million unemployment claims, we 500,000 of those are here in Illinois, we're starting to see numbers shift away from premium brands and into more generic store brands. As more people are kind of worried about the future, right, worried about their finances, we're starting to see that. So I think week by week, almost, it seems to change as the narrative around this pandemic and the unemployment story changes. So it will be interesting to see, as we move into April, what those numbers will look like then.
The first week of the pandemic, Lou Manfredini, our colleague here who runs a couple of Ace Hardware stores, Edgebrook is one of them in Chicago, said that business was good for some items. People were getting power strips and things for their copying machines and stuff like that. I thought a business like Staples would be well positioned for this. What's the story there?
Well, it's not so much like office supply kind of staples, but like household staples, like your staple goods, right? Household goods, people stocked up on, you know, we saw this with toilet paper, right? People stocked up on not just food, but household goods, cleaning supplies, things of like, what can I do to feel like I've battened down the hatches? We saw that really, really surge around the time the stay-home orders. I know at my supermarket, I thought, I just need to pick up some basic stuff. I'm like, it's not good to hoard. That's not what I'm going to do. And lines were to the back of the store. A lot of people were filling up carts with cleaning supplies, like all of this kind of stuff. But again, we see people stocked, and now they don't have as much to buy because they're kind of stocked up. What they are stocking up on is like the fresher kind of food. They have all their canned goods. They need to run out and get vegetables and that kind of thing. Looking at the 2008-2009 recession numbers, we can learn a lot about behavior. Of course, that was different. It wasn't a pandemic. But we can watch that shift to there was a lot of stocking up at the beginning, and then that gave way to generic items. People felt stocked up. They were trying to save their money more. So it's always interesting to see consumer behavior reflected in their spending habits and see what's happening in the world and how that translates to household budgets.
I'm glad you said all of that. So help me. I did think I saw a story that said that the Staples chain was not doing as well as one would have guessed at first, maybe past that first flush. Just one last comment from you, though, on these other staples, and that is, I don't suppose anybody could have anticipated, given the breadth of this thing, how people were going to behave.
No, I really think there have been a few pieces. There was one in, I believe, The Atlantic that was speaking to some mental health professionals about what is it that made people rush to buy and what drives our behavior in the psychological sense, you know, when at the grocery store. And a lot of it is about feeling safe and comforted and feeling like you're caring for your family with, okay, we have everything we need, so right now I can take a breath. So a lot of it's about that. I think worry then is the next piece we're going to see of how that plays out as people are either already feeling the burden of unemployment or worried that they might do that soon. I think that part is what we're going to be watching most in April.
Well put, Amy. Business reporter Amy Gu, thank you for your time this afternoon. We'll visit again.
Thanks, John.